Hey everyone, welcome in to the Woj Pod. My guest in studio this week, the great Zach Lowe. We talk about NBA lottery reform, tampering, that Cleveland Cavaliers 2018 draft pick via the Celtics, Nets, Carmelo Anthony, and a lot more. Stay with us. Here with Zach Lowe. Zach, how are you, man?
I'm hanging in. How you doing?
I'm great. You make me nervous because you come prepared with notes. You prepare for everything.
I'm not smart enough to not prepare for things. I have to prepare for things. I was actually reading, I'm having Jackie McMullen on my podcast next week, which I'm very excited about. And I was reading all these interviews that she had done in preparation for it. And she talks about in one interview how she was in awe of Bob Ryan's ability to remember everything about everything. And she can't remember like what she said 5 minutes ago in contrast. And I was like, oh, this makes me feel good that Jackie McMullen also can't remember what she said 5 minutes ago. So I need these notes. These notes are important.
Well, good to have you in here in our studio here in Manhattan. And let's start with lottery reform. We reported a story on Thursday on the site about Adam Silver, the league office, you know, back pushing this agenda, which kind of went away a little bit. They sort of regrouped over the last couple of years and now are back. Essentially, what will happen here is the NBA's competition committee, which is made up of general managers, a few, you know, elite general managers and a couple coaches. They will go through what the league's proposal is right now. They can do one of several things. They could not recommend any of it. They could recommend part of it. They could recommend all of it. They could amend it with some new ideas. And then it goes to the board of governors, which is essentially the owners at the end of September, and they'll vote on it. But I think there's some confidence this time that some part of this is going to get through. And essentially what this reform is, it would take essentially flatten out the percentages of the teams at the top of the lottery. Right now, the number one, the worst team gets, it has a 25% chance. And then on descending down 2-3, they would flatten that out. So 1, 2, and 3 would all have the same percentage chance. And the difference between having the worst record and say the fifth record is only going to be a few percentage points. And so what they want to do is de-incentivize tanking and make teams. And then teams like right now, if you have the worst record, you can only drop to 4. If you have the second worst record, you can only go to 5. Well, now with this proposal, number one could go to 5. Number two could go to 6 and so on down. Let me start with this, Zach. Is tanking an issue anymore in the league, especially if the rules are going to be rewritten for next year to penalize teams who rest healthy players, especially in national TV games? If the league is addressing the resting rule and the sitting out of players, is this even necessary?
Well, whether it's necessary or not, we can debate, right? But tanking is always going to exist in many, many different forms. But as long as there is something like a reverse order draft where the worst team either gets the first pick, like in football, or has a better chance of getting the first pick, and as long as the single best way to win championships in the NBA is to have a top 10 player, and really the only proven way to get one is a draft one at the top of the draft, there will always be, you can call it rebuilding, you can call it tanking, there will always be teams that are designed top down to be bad. Now, that's one form of tanking. There's late season tanking for protected picks, which I think they should probably address. There's late season tanking for playoff seedings. There's always going to be tanking. I'm actually skeptical that this proposal would really change all that much, but the question is fair because the resting stuff is going to address like what the Suns did last year where they just told Bledsoe and Tyson Chandler, like, just go away. You're not, would they not go away? You're just right. Warm up. Just be a warm up player. Do the layup line. So you know, look, we can talk about what happened to Sam Hinkie. I don't know what we should really say about that, but there is the perception that the guy who took it to an extreme, created the process, engendered all the controversy that the process generated, was removed from his job. And that sent a chilling message to certainly the rest of the GMs, right?
Absolutely. And that's the thing, too, with this. Sam was the face of that whole, the process, the tank. But you don't do that without ownership. Ownership makes that decision. Sam had an extreme idea, but in the end, while Sam took all the heat for it, and now in the end may get a lot of credit based on how this team, the result of that plays out over the next few years with the young players who came from that, it's an ownership decision to do what they did. And I've had GMs say to me, it won't happen again because there's a perception that the league stepped in and pushed Sam out. Now, I don't know if it was to that extreme. I think the league was alarmed over it. Not only what Philly was doing, they were afraid it was going to start a domino effect of lots of other teams doing this. And they have, if you had three or four teams in the league doing what they were doing, I mean, think of the impact it would have had on the league. And the league feared that. And some other GMs have said, and I'm sure they've said it to you, it was, like you said, it was a chilling message. The league may come after your job.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we could debate what the Bulls are doing now. Is that tanking? Is that rebuilding? Is that more or less extreme than what the Sixers did? We could debate what the Hawks are doing. I mean, there are always teams that are going to bottom out. But certainly, whatever happened to Sam sort of sent the message of, if you do this in as bald a way as they did it, there could be consequences.
You wrote a lot about it. So in 2014, Adam Silver tried to get lottery reform through. It was a more contrasted against what they're proposing now. This is a scaled down model. That was a more dramatic model. The team who had the worst record could have fallen as far as seventh. And that really, and then two could have gone to eight, which really would change the, that's different than this. But we all know the difference between having the first pick and the fifth pick or second and sixth is the difference between getting, you know, Karl Anthony Towns or Epe Udo.
Yeah.
Like, right? That's the difference. And so
sometimes, yeah.
Adam thought he was going to get that through. The league thought they were getting it through.
Everybody thought there was a
rally over the last few days by Philly, really didn't want the rule to change, obviously. And then there were a few other small market teams who, anyway, what do you remember about, you wrote a lot about it at that time. It was just a different, there was a panic in the league because of the Sixers. And like you said, the only way to get that transcendent player, and for most teams in the league, is through the draft. And they said, wait a minute, we're limiting our chances to do that.
Well, that's, and so I remember, what I remember is I predicted it would pass 29-1 with Philly as the only dissenting vote. I mean, that's how much momentum, not even momentum, that's how much animus there was around the league for what the Sixers were doing. And then you reported it, I think more than anyone else, there was this sort of small market and, you know, who was behind it or what teams were behind it is now the subject of some debate.
I was asking some guys yesterday who I thought were behind it and they're saying it wasn't me.
Of course,
it wasn't
anybody anymore.
Yeah, they're all blaming it on the Sixers. They're still blaming it on the Sixers. The Sixers convinced everybody.
It was nobody. Yeah. And then there was this sort of last minute rebellion and people forget it passed 17-13. They got a majority vote, but they need two thirds. They need 23. I think they're going to get 23 this time because the Philly stuff has subsided. So there isn't this like, there isn't the Philly. The sense I get from some of the teams that I think were concerned about the last one is, we're tired. We're just not this is a less drastic proposal, as you said. And B, like, I just don't sense the energy and motivation there to, like, we're not going tooth and nail with Adam on this. Mm-hmm. And if Adam wants to get it through, I think I would – look, I predicted the last one would pass 29-1, so what the hell do I know? Right now, today, I think if it gets through the competition committee looking like it does now, and as you point out, it might not, I think it would pass.
Yeah, and I think a smaller market GM made a point to me yesterday about who is not for this. Who said, hey, listen, like, not only can most markets, say 24, 25 markets realistically, they're not in the game for big free agents. And we can argue who the markets are that the star free agent will consider. But he said, we can't even do trades anymore for a star player because the player's telling us, or the agent's telling us, do not trade for my guy. He will not re-sign with you. Like, whether that would go through the Kyrie Irving process, there were teams who knew if they traded for him, they were being told, same with Paul George, any big player who's available, there's going to be teams told, yes, he'd like to play for you. There's an excellent chance he'd re-sign. And there's many others being told, do it at your own risk. He won't be here. And, you know, that scares teams from doing deals. And so many of them are saying our only way to get an impact player, I mean, use Phoenix, for example. Like, they did shut down guys down the stretch last year. But, like, if you're Phoenix, what other chance do you have to get a great player? Like, yes. Were they tanking? Yes, they were tanking, but they also went out in free agency this summer. They tried to get Blake Griffin. They tried to get Paul Millsap. They hadn't, like, completely retreated, but if we're going to be bad, we're going to chase that pick at the end of the year. And Kyrie Irving wasn't going to re-sign with them. if they did a deal. They weren't putting Josh Jackson in a deal. So, like, if you're Ryan McDonough, like, what should you have done?
So now we're getting at the heart of the issue, right? And what annoys me sometimes about the tanking debate is that people take lottery reform as if it's in a vacuum. And when you tweak – the NBA is this very complex, holistic system of rules about free agency and restricted free agency and the designated players. All of these branches connect to the same tree. So if you shake one branch, if you shake lottery reform, you got to think about what does that do to the other branches, or how could we shake the other branches so they dovetail nicely with lottery reform. So what we're really talking about is, like, how do you get a star player? Okay? Teams tank to get stars. That's it. Implicit in that is the understanding that, like, it's hard for some teams to get stars any other way. It's hard. What you're saying is it's hard for small market team X to get any free agent when they hit free agency, right? To get, like, because the free agents are going to go to Houston or Dallas or Miami or Los Angeles or New York. Let's leave aside that Los Angeles and New York have not been able to sign glamorous free agents since they've been bad. So if you're going to try to solve, if the point of tanking is to get stars and you want to eliminate tanking, you can't just look at lottery. In theory, you can't just look at lottery reform. You have to look at how can we enable these other teams to get stars in different ways. So maybe you have to think more holistically about the system. Like, maybe instead of draft picks being under contract for 4 years and then hitting restricted free agency and effectively being tied to their teams for 7 or 8 years, maybe draft picks are under contract for a shorter period of time. Maybe there is no restricted free agency. Maybe teams that are rebuilding and have cap room 1 year that they don't use can roll it over to the following year so they have a better show. So all of these things connect.
Like your cell phone bill.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that was the kind of uproar that – not uproar, but the opposition to this is that it's – the opposition to this proposal, which was articulated by Ben Falk yesterday, who's a former Sixers executive.
Yeah, on Twitter, yeah.
Is essentially, A, it's not actually going to do anything to deter tanking, and B, if you want to deter tanking, you have to do all of these other things to enable other teams – to enable star players to move more freely around the league earlier in their careers. Phoenix is interesting. So I don't totally buy the argument that you and others are making about Phoenix. And here's why. Boston was never a free agency destination ever. Didn't even have cap room for like 20 years. Like Dana Barros's cap hold was on their books for a million years.
Right.
Now they're a free agent destination. Now, are they a LeBron destination? No, but they're a Hayward destination.
They found the guys who fit them, and Al Horford, Gordon Hayward, who fit.
They're right, not. Yeah. They got a meeting with Durant. I don't know that they were ever.
When Chris Paul was in New Orleans and Boston wanted to trade for him, well, there were two teams. If you think back, when Chris Paul was in New Orleans, two teams wanted to be aggressive in trading for him, and he said, "I will not re-sign with you." Boston and Golden State.
And so, what happened with Boston is they got good.
Yep.
And they got good because of smart things that Danny Ainge did. One of which was trading for Isaiah Thomas from Phoenix.
Yep.
So let's reverse engineer it. Let's say Phoenix keeps Isaiah Thomas, they nailed the Devin Booker pick. Let's say Marquise Chriss looks unbelievable. And they made some other smart trade for whoever that they got a Jay Crowder throw in who's now exciting. And let's say they're in a 45 win fun team. Does Kyrie Irving deliver that same message?
You're right.
So
because they had in the past. They have been a free agent destination. There were times players, you got to go back a ways, but there was a time where, for different reasons, weather and golf and things, guys like Barkley went there. Oh, that was a trade. But he stayed, but guys wanted
people
to
like
play
Phoenix.
There. They like Phoenix.
Some people live in Phoenix
in
the offseason.
Yeah. But you're right. You put your organization in a position where you're competitive, where you're winning, and you make it appealing. It's like you said, for the same reason New York and L.A. had not been a destination because they were poorly run and guys didn't feel like they could win there. And being New York and LA is not enough to get you there if you're not running it well. Guys are too smart. Agents are too smart. Now, San Antonio gets LaMarcus Aldridge, but he's not a transcendent player. And those players rarely.
San Antonio also has been unbelievable for 20 years.
That's right. It took them 16, 17 years of almost unprecedented consistent success to be in position. They didn't get Jason Kidd back when they tried, or Aldridge was the first big time free agent. And we'd still would argue whether, he was still not, you weren't building your team around him, but he was significant. And they've shown that if you're winning and you're good and you're running it well, and guys, Daryl Morey in Houston, like no one ever thought going into Dwight Howard's last year, like Houston forced Dwight at that time, who everybody wanted, to have to consider them because they were, he looked at it and said, if I want to win, Harden's there, the pieces, I can win there. And none of us probably really thought he was going to leave LA. Even though he didn't love it, he'd probably stay. Well, he didn't. Houston's a good example of that. And so you're right. It is incumbent on these teams like Phoenix to run themselves better, to be more competitive. And that eliminates some of the excuses.
That said, I am sympathetic to the idea that there are certain markets where the draft is a far more important way to acquire or maybe the only way to acquire a transcendent superstar versus other markets where they have more tools in the toolbox or more realistic tools in the toolbox. And the general argument that, you know, if you're going to tweak lottery reform so that the worst team, so you can't game the system quite as much, get really bad and get the number 1, 2, 3 pick. If you're going to tweak the system that way, then maybe you should tweak it in other ways so that those same teams have a better chance to acquire superstar free agents who are 27, 28, 29 years old. It's a very difficult issue, and I don't have a huge problem with the way it operates now. I don't really think this proposal is like a huge change that's going to be a lamp, but I've never read an alternative that jumped out to me like, oh, I want to do that.
And there's some in the league who think that the problem sort of corrected itself, that the fear of what Philly did, that all of a sudden it was going to spread around the league, didn't happen. And that with the new rules that are going to come in on resting and punishing teams for sitting players, especially around national TV games, that will help correct the tanking. You said something at the beginning that is a bigger issue. You know, it's one thing to say I'm right now the eighth seed or I'm going to get the eighth pick and I'm going to just mail in these last 2 weeks so I can get the 7 or 6. That's one thing. It's another thing for Cleveland to spend the last 20 games of the season trying to avoid the number one seed.
Once every 2 years, a team will start losing games and resting players to get its playoff seed where they want.
Right. That's a bigger problem, isn't it?
I don't know that. None of these things have really ever enraged me because they're all like, I don't know how you really police it. Like you don't have to sit. You know, remember Memphis tanked for a playoff seed. I think a couple of times Memphis has tanked for playoff seeds. You don't have to sit Zach Randolph. You could just be like, oh, Zach's sore. We'll play in like 12 minutes tonight, you know? You know, but there are all sorts of things like that. In this proposal, I think the danger of this proposal, and I don't know how dangerous it is, but the danger of this proposal is if you're 10th, in their conference with 15 games left, you know, and you're 3.5 games out of the playoffs, but you're 3.5 games out of a 20% chance or whatever it ends up being, an X percent chance that's much higher under this system than it is under the current system of a top 5 pick. There will be teams that are in 10th that instead of going balls out for the 8th seed will say, you know, why don't we just see, like, if we go on a 2 or 3 game losing streak, then we're going to pack it in and try and get our odds up for a top 5 pick. And this is like, so then you have questions like, okay, so I don't know, by the way, I don't know how realistic you think that is. That's the number one, I think, objection to this proposal, is that it just moves the leverage point for tanking. So maybe you don't tank to go from 4-1 anymore. You tank to go from 8-4 or just out of the playoffs to in the middle of the lottery. I don't know how, I'd be curious to say, like, how realistic do you think that is for a team that's in a playoff race to tank out of a playoff race? Is it just the last 4 games of the season thing, or is it because Daryl Morey made this point on Twitter today, and I think he's right.
Whenever Daryl starts tweeting this stuff, I always look at the, is he going to get fined for this one? Like, cause sometimes Darryl, he's walking out, Darryl getting fined. Fine line.
Daryl gets fined so much more than has ever been publicly reported. Daryl's fined all the time. Yeah. But he's right that, like, that trade-off hurts. There's a cost to that trade-off. There's no real cost for a team being like, we suck, let's suck a little bit more. Like, it's just degrees of sucking. There's a real trade-off to, hey, we might make the playoffs and get, like, home playoff game revenues and, like, our fans are kind of excited to, like, let's alienate the fans and not get those home playoff revenues and try and get a top five. Like, that's a real dilemma. And I think that's interesting. I think the league is right to sort of hunt for that sweet spot that way.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, like, this issue speaks to the conference imbalance. If you're a Western team if you're Dallas, if you're Phoenix, and you say, it is such a gulf from where we are to getting into the playoffs in the West, like us going out and signing a couple of middling free agents, it's not getting us in the playoffs. So in the East, you can move from outside in, like Charlotte feels like, you know, they didn't make the playoffs last year. But they think they had Dwight and they're healthy. They can move up not just to eight, but like you're not going to make a jump generally like that in the West.
Charlotte in the West has no hope or limited hope of making the playoffs next year.
No hope.
I mean, the East is such a joke. I mean, everyone knows that. The East all Charlotte had to do was literally just do nothing and they would have benefited from all the player movement. Like Detroit is all of a sudden like they should be this drama last year in Detroit, and Reggie Jackson's hurt. This guy hates this guy. Blah blah blah. Like they're to make the playoffs.
They swap in Avery Bradley, and now you look at them. And Reggie Jackson is at training camp, and he's healthy. He doesn't show up a few weeks into the season. That team is they could be 6 seed, 5 seed. I don't know. You know. So, but I do think this gets also conference imbalance that the Western teams at times can behave differently than you can get yourself an extension as a coach or a GM in the East by getting into the playoffs. You may sort of be stuck in that middle place. Charlotte's sort of an organization that's, there's not a lot of upside on their roster. The payroll, they've paid their own guys a lot. Cody Zeller's going to be starting at $15 million this year. And
probably to come off the bench, right? We assume that's what's going to happen with Cody Zeller.
And so that's harder to do in the West. So you're right. There's lots of variables. And then there's one other idea that I know it's going to be talked about in the competition committee is a different idea. This isn't a league idea. This is more of an idea that's come out of the competition committee, which is how about this? How about you can't pick in the top three in consecutive years? So if you, Minnesota is an example, if you get Karl Anthony Towns this year, you can pick as high as fourth next year. Yeah, essentially de-incentivize teams from just being not in the lottery all the time. The rebuttal of that, some people would say, hey, Orlando's been bad for a very long time. They've never really had a super. They did. They had the number two pick in what was just an awful draft, right? They had the number two pick. They took Oladipo. Now, they all should have taken Giannis.
I was going to say.
A lot of people missed. They all missed on Giannis.
Yeah, but that happens.
You know, it happens. In like another year with Orlando, they tried to get Porzingis to stay in the draft that year. He was guaranteed at like the pick they used, Elfrid Payton, which was 10th. And Porzingis knew he could have been picked. He didn't feel he was ready. He wanted to come over ready. So Porzingis doesn't, and they had done their work. He might have dropped to them that year. He stays, and then the next year he comes in the draft, and Orlando still wants him. New York gets him at 4. Orlando's picking 5, and they take Hezonja instead. That difference between Porzingis, Hezonja, and that just gets to luck.
Yeah. There's a lot of luck, and you know, look, if there's something to hit Sam Hinkie over on his draft record, it's Okafor over Porzingis. I mean, that's the pick that, you know, and no one yelled and screamed about that pick. Yeah. Some people did, not many. But how about this? Here's just like, we're talking about wild ideas. So if you're really worried about teams tanking out of the playoff race, this is an example of how every branch hits the other branches. Like, how about you make getting into the playoffs as the 7th or 8th seed a better thing? So how about like, I always liked that they had best of 5 series. So like you win one game, you win. If you're the underdog, you win one of the first games. Like all of a sudden, it's interesting.
Right.
Or I've had people propose to me, like, why don't you put the 7th and 8th seeds or even 5, 6, 7, and 8 in the lottery too to reward them?
Mm-hmm.
But then you'd get a different kind of tanking where a team would tank down from 4 to 5 or something like that. So it's a really hard issue. I don't feel passionate either way about this particular proposal. I'm okay with it. I think it does sort of move the needle a little bit to eliminate the most egregious, to eliminate the bad team trying to be really bad, which I think is a bad look that the NBA has some incentive to eliminate.
And I think there are a lot of teams who believe that the league's motivation on this as much as anything is perception, is people writing about tanking, talking about it. That the league was even sensitive last year in Miami to the media there, which is almost a reverse thing. The team at 10-31 or 10-20, when Miami went on that tremendous run, almost made the playoffs, that there were some in the media there saying, what are they doing? Why are they trying to win? Just tank, stay bad. What are you doing? Which is not in the DNA of that organization. They weren't ever going to do that. But like, you can't control that. People are going to say, talk. That, to me, that's impossible. There'll always be somebody contrarian to whatever's going on, but that there's a feeling within the rank and file of the league that just the perception and talk about tanking, that if they just do something, it helps to eliminate. But like you said, it'll just be degrees. Like, there'll still be motivation to do it. Your chances might be less, but you still say getting as high a pick as I can is still my only route. Maybe I had a higher percentage last year than I do this year, but I'm still chasing the odds.
I do think the Heat figured into this debate in multiple ways. Number one, what you just pointed out, that there is ever a segment of a team's fan base who's rooting for them to lose and loudly on Twitter is a look that the NBA does not like. And B, like, there was a sense of like, man, that really sucks for the Heat. Like, you rally like that. I mean, a historic turnaround, the likes of which I don't know that has ever been seen in the league before. You get down to the last night of the season and the Nets rest their crappy players against the Bulls, but they're good players, a crappy team for no reason rests its players. Now, there's lots of things that happened before that, that, you know, are why, like, starting 10-31 is ultimately why the Heat missed the playoffs, not because of that game, but still. And then you get rewarded with like the 14th pick. And it just feels like, or like a 0.0 whatever chance of moving up to the top three. And I think so the Heat, like, there was this notion that like, that kind of sucks for the Heat that they got left behind. Like, the top three rule though, that you can't pick the top three 2 years in a row, those multi-year schemes, like, it's been another popular suggestion has been like, why don't we use combined team records from like the last 3 years? Those have always made me a little uncomfortable. Like, so much happens. Like, every year is such a distinct thing with, like, think about what can happen to a franchise in a year. Like, a guy has to be traded. Like, your best player has to be traded. Your best player breaks his leg. It's like, the multi-year stuff has always made me a little uncomfortable. I get where people are coming from. You want to not have this, like, sort of over-dependency on the lottery and the top of the lottery. But those have always made me nervous.
This episode of the Woj Pod is sponsored by Spotify. Every episode of the Woj Pod is now available on Spotify, and I think I know what you're thinking. Wait a minute. Spotify has podcasts? Yes. Your place for all things music now has the world's most popular podcast. To stream the Woj Pod on Spotify, open the app, tap browse, and look for us in the podcast section. Follow us and all your favorites to get new episodes dropped into your library as soon as they drop. For more, head to Spotify.com/podcast. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100 plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Because unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within one day. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Woj. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Woj, W-O-J. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Woj. Now back to my conversation with Zach Lowe. Couple other issues. This is a great September conversation because, right, free agency's done. Everyone's waiting for camp to start. Carmelo is unlikely to be moved.
Yeah, we should talk about Carmelo. We can talk about Carmelo.
Let's talk about Carmelo. Houston right now just does not have a pathway to do a direct deal with New York based on what New York wants. Melo has not really waived the no trade. He's not really open. Maybe that happens. I think New York is hoping he opens this up. Portland would love for Melo to open this up.
I think Portland, I mean, you've been on the nose about Portland ahead of everybody, but I think Portland wants Melo like way, like even more than people, like Portland really, really wants to get Melo.
It fits. I mean, it really fits for them. I mean, it really fits. Obviously, McCollum and Lillard and Nurkic, who I saw a photo of him the other day, and I was talking to some Portland folks, like, he looks great, like, lost weight. That's what they wanted him. Get in shape. He's playing for – he's a contract year for him. Perfect. And you saw how good he was. They were tremendous with him after that trade. And you plug Melo into that team. And again, a team, that's the blueprint, right? They go out and draft two all-star level guards at, let's see, 6 and 10, right? 6 and 10 from Weber State and Lehigh. Neil O'Shea picks those guards. The Nurkic deal, which last year was funny. How many actual, this is a separate thing, but think of how few actual basketball trades there are anymore, where somebody is trading a comparable player in a comparable position because we think our guy fits better with us than, like, it's like how trades used to be. There are almost no trades anymore. Every trade is built off, somebody has lost leverage. They have to either, they're either getting money off or somebody's taking on an asset for, you know, like the Chicago, New Orleans deal the other day for Pondexter, right? They got paid cash, a decent second round pick to create, you know, because New Orleans is creating space. That Nurkic Plumlee deal was like, it was like a basketball trade. Like Denver had reasons to make the move and they thought maybe Plumlee could fit better with Jokic and Nurkic and Mike Malone weren't great. Anyway, that deal, like there aren't many of them. That was one of them. But Portland, you slide Carmelo in there. And again, free agency. Guys aren't dying to go to Portland, Oregon. They're just not. And like a lot of other markets. But Carmelo for them puts them where in the – like and now it depends who would they give up and all that. But like, you know, they have some picks they could give. They'd be a really good team with him.
They could also be the fifth seed.
Yep. But that's a pretty big jump. I mean, that's a pretty good team.
Where they were 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I just – you know, I mean – like Jeff Van Gundy said this, I was hoping he would save it for our annual preseason podcast, but like none of this matters. The Warriors,
I know none of this
the
matters.
The Warriors are going to just destroy everybody
and that's it.
But Portland, so here's an interesting question. I've been dying to ask you about this. So Melo signed, his contract in the summer of 2014, I think, the year that LeBron moved. And it has an early termination option for 2018-19. It's an early termination option? Yeah. Mm-hmm. For $27.928 million. Looking at it now. When he signed that deal and in the following year after that, when everyone understood the cap spike that was going to happen and how high the cap would go, there was this sort of like, oh, all these players are going to turn down their options. They're going to re-enter free agency, you know, as soon as possible, cash in another big deal. The cap's going to keep going up. Teams are going to like – if you trade for Carmelo Anthony, you have to – I don't know where his head's at, but like Carmelo Anthony probably should not opt out of $27.9 mm-hmm. million, right? I mean like unless he gets – a buyout is a totally different scenario. But if a team like Portland or the Lakers or whoever trades for Carmelo Anthony, like you kind of have to assume he's on our books for $28 million for another year, right? I mean I would
think
so.
And that's why there's so few teams really interested at the number. Now on a buyout, everybody – like.
Sure,
everybody be interested in a buyout.
The minimum comes
but there's
play.
There's not many teams in a league who. But you're right. Does he opt out of that contract? I don't
That's
know how he gets it back.
A lot of money.
It's like Dwayne Wade. Dwayne was similar. Like if Dwayne was not opting out of that money, and he may get the buyout eventually. But to him, for him to opt out of that $23 million.
Do you think there's any chance that Carmelo doesn't report for training camp if he's still in the Knicks?
Few people have brought that up.
That's why I asked.
I guess there's always a chance, but I would say that the idea of Melo taking a fine every day and it's going to cost you money if you do that, I would think he's less apt to do that than other guys would. But if he were to open up his no trade to more teams and they still couldn't find a deal, I think then you can say, okay, like you guys haven't done your part. But when your no trade is really with one team, Houston, for the most part, it's harder, but it's funny in basketball. Football, obviously, that happens all the time. It's different because the guys do it to get their contracts.
Right.
We don't see it in basketball. That was a question with Kyrie. Was Kyrie going to go? Cleveland had questions about whether Kyrie was going to show up.
They sure did.
But now you can threaten. Listen, you can threaten anything in August, September. And so.
Yeah, I'm a big – it's easy for me in my seat where I don't work for a team. I just say whatever the hell I want. But I'm a big fan of, like, call their bluff. Like, I was reading been reading a couple books about the Warriors recently and just like the rise of the Warriors and like, you know, Steph Curry made it very clear. I do not want to be drafted by the Warriors. Told I'm not working out for you. I want to be drafted by the Knicks. And the Warriors are like, that's great. We're going to pick you. I don't care. We want you on our team. Like, you go back to all these, like, Kobe and the Nets. Kobe's going to go overseas. Just pick Kobe. Like, that's all the
you have
fall,
his rights. You
teams
have his,
fall for this all the time. Like, particularly the draft. Porzingis is another one. Porzingis, Philly. Like, staying away from Philly. Like, who cares? Just pick him.
I wrote about this. I was standing. It was Andy Miller's workout in Vegas where all the teams came to see Porzingis. It was the first time Phil Jackson had seen him. He hadn't even gone overseas to see him. That's another conversation. But the whole Knicks group was there. Derek Fisher, Phil Jackson. They must have had seven guys
Dancing
there.
With the Stars contestant, Derek Fisher.
I saw that. That was a logical next step. So I remember Hinkie and Andy Miller, his agent, standing there like facing each other with this awkward silence. And Sam was like, hey, I thought you were going to let me meet with him here. And I said, I never said I would let you meet with him. I said we'd maybe, but it's not going to happen because he didn't want him in Philly. And he had Noel at that time too, but he didn't want him with the Sixers. And Sam, they didn't use the pick on him. They used it on Okafor. But the Lakers were the other one that year. Lakers did have him in for a workout. And I talked to Porzingis about his workout there. And what the Lakers would do was they would run you and run you and run you. Some teams, a lot of teams do this. They want to see how you respond to being exhausted adversity. Do you quit? Do you fight through it? And Porzingis said, he told me, I remember I was dizzy and I thought I was going to pass out and I thought I was going to puke. He had he'd come from Europe and he had been working out in Vegas and went to LA. He was
Madsen beat the crap out of him?
Yes. Yeah, Mark Madsen was the guy they had.
Not in a fight beat the crap, just like be physical with them.
That's right. And Porzingis said, he just remembers saying, I got to stay on my feet. I got to fight through this. And he goes, but I was dizzy. But they didn't draft him. They drafted D'Angelo Russell. And so the Lakers had him in the building. Philly never got him in the building. And the Knicks, I know you get credit for drafting him, but like Porzingis was a top five pick coming into the season. It wasn't like they drafted the player at number four who is exactly the player who the number five team would have taken. Like, you can take some credit for it, but draft the guy. He's coming.
Yeah, like Kobe's going to go play in Italy? Come on, just pick Kobe.
That was one of the great – that could never happen again. What Arn Tellem and Jerry West and Sonny Vaccaro, to an extent, pulled to get all those teams to pass on Kobe, to get him to 13 to Charlotte so that they could trade him for Vlade Divac. Like Bobby Marks will tell you, the Nets, at that time, you could work out a guy as many times as you wanted. And you could bring him up and work him out against your own players. So Bobby Marks was working for the Nets then, and Bobby would pick up Kobe. And he got to know him. He would drive him maybe from Philly up or from the airport in, and they had him in multiple times, and he would just work out against their players. And it was Calipari's first draft, and they scared him on the night before, and they told him, if you draft him, you're going to have an empty podium for your first press conference. And Cal backed down. He took Kerry Kittles, who was, you know, a very good four-year player at Villanova, but was not. And, you know, Kobe probably would have stayed in Jersey and then probably in year three or four forced to trade anyway because his career would not have played out in New Jersey. There's no way. But he would have been there. Might say Cal probably doesn't get fired in his third year.
Kudos to the Warriors for picking Steph Curry.
And then
Larry Riley says he would have picked him too. If, you know, because he wanted, because he, if he had the number two pick, Blake was the number one pick in that draft, Blake Griffin. And he said, I would have taken Blake one, but I would have taken Steph two. I don't care what they would have told me.
Going back in the old drafts, I mean, it's so easy to do. It's like so easy to second guess everybody, but like the near misses of drafts, the stories of we were going to do this, but then this got us off that are, you know, some of them like, you know, of course, 25 teams were all ready to take Draymond Green except for, right, they, you know, but.
Of course.
But. There's always the, you know, David Kahn. Would David Kahn still be in Minnesota if he take? I don't think.
Well, that's the 2009 draft. Someday when I have time, I would love to do like an oral history of the 2009 draft because that's Harden at 3, Rubio, Flynn 5-6, Curry 7.
Flynn, go back to that. Johnny Flynn.
Yeah, who had the same hip problems that Isaiah Thomas has now, or a version of them.
Except he couldn't play.
And people forget because he's not in the league anymore. There's Johnny Flynn, but Thabeat at two.
He's
just an all-timer.
I think Michael Heisley was pushing that. Well, maybe that's what they all say, but I remember.
Yeah, everyone blames the owner afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. That was a bad one.
It's a great draft. Danny Green, 46. How many times did Danny Green get cut in
released.
The D-League? Patty Mills at 55.
Ooh. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a very long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that gamer show you'd like to go to, and none of those other ticket sites seem to want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. And it's pretty neat how they do it, too. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and you never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and they'll let you know if the ticket prices fall. And even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I use it often because it's simple and it works. And best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. They show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to trick you with big fees on the checkout page. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. That's $20 right into your pocket. And to get it, all you've got to do is this. Download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, then enter promo code WOJ, W-O-J. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. It does not get any easier than that. So please support SeatGeek like they support us here at the WOJ Pod. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code WOJ today. And now back to our guest, Zach Lowe. Zach, the dust clearing now in Cleveland. They had their news conference with Isaiah Thomas and their new group. And the question it seems like some people are asking now is, should the Cavaliers flip that Nets pick to use it to get an impact player who could help them win this year, keep LeBron? It is not happening. Like, that is not why they traded for that pick. They would have done a very, and we've covered this before the Kyrie trade, the fact that they don't have a commitment from LeBron, the fact that they have real, within the organization, there's real significant doubt about whether he's going to return, impacted the kind of deal they were looking to do. They weren't looking to do a, you know, they felt like they kind of got, Boston was the only team that could satisfy a perfect world for them, which was they got long-term with the draft pick, and then Crowder, Isaiah, short-term. Now, Isaiah, who knows what he's going to be able to give them this year. Crowder certainly is a terrific piece for a team trying to win in the postseason. He fits that. Their ability to get a young player anywhere else that could potentially be better than that pick. They couldn't get Josh Jackson. They weren't going to get maybe the young piece they would might want from Denver. So they're not doing that. That's not the plan in Cleveland. And the risk of trading that pick to be stuck with somebody else if LeBron leaves who doesn't fit a rebuild, they're not going to let themselves be in the position of having to take years to untangle that roster. They're holding on to that pick.
My question has always been, well, who is it going to be?
Yeah.
And the most popular name has been DeMarcus Cousins, and it is not going to be DeMarcus Cousins. The only way it's DeMarcus Cousins is if LeBron says, DeMarcus Cousins is my new best friend. I love DeMarcus Cousins. If you trade for DeMarcus Cousins, I will sign on a piece of paper that I am coming back here and he will come back here too.
That's the only way.
And I mean, who else? You look across the rosters. I mean, I don't know. It's not Paul George anymore. It's not, I don't even, it's not Marc Gasol or Mike Conley. I don't know who it would be.
Yeah. It's just, they've had to make a tactical decision in Cleveland about how to go forward here. And, you know, that team, you know, that was part of why Kyrie was looking to beat it out of town before LeBron. He wanted to, you know, essentially part of the reason was, you know, Kyrie wanted to not have his future dictated by LeBron's decision. He was going to get ahead of it. I'm not going to be at the mercy of this. And I think that took a lot of people aback. But, you know, he made the right decision. It worked out great for him. And so, yeah, that Cleveland thing will be interesting.
Where that pick lands is going to be the subject of just a day-to-day standings check where the Nets pick lands.
There are worse teams in the potentially worse teams in the East than the Nets.
So there are people that are relatively high on the Nets this year. And I get why. You know, they're frisky. They play hard. Mm-hmm. Russell's interesting. People think Russell's good. Russell's not good yet, but he could be good. Lynn, if he's healthy, played 30-something games last year. I'm actually a little lower on the Nets. Mm-hmm. I thought Lopez was just like so crucial to any competency that they displayed. Now, maybe Lynn for a full season offsets the loss of Lopez a little bit. But like, who are we sure is worse than the Nets in the whole league? The Suns are probably worse than the Nets.
What about Atlanta, Chicago?
Atlanta and Chicago are potentially probably worse than the Nets, but it's close. The Kings are probably worse than the Nets. The over-unders are all very close, although I believe Chicago's is quite low, like almost absurdly low. They're going to be so bad. I would guess, I mean, look, I trust Mike Zarin's math on what the expected value or landing spot of the Nets pick is. I would guess it's like 4.
Mm-hmm.
I don't buy this, like, it could be 8 or they could even chase a playoff spot.
No.
I bet. Now, if the Knicks trade Melo for very little mm-hmm. present or buy out Melo, like, they're going to be terrible.
Yep.
Their point guard situation, they and the Bulls, if you combined all their point guards, would still have the worst point guard situation in the league. But like, that Nets pick is just going to be day to day, really, because Boston is sweating. I mean, Boston, they're thrilled to have Kyrie. They're going to be really pissed if that's the number one pick in the draft.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, they did the right thing. I mean, they're in a mode now of, we forget, they still have like the Clippers pick, that Memphis pick, a Kings, potential Philly. I lose track.
They're loaded. Boston is loaded.
It just keeps going.
Everyone acted like it was funny to see that trade unfold. I was abroad when that trade happened. So I learned about it at like 4 a.m. Croatia time when my phone started going crazy. And by then I was asleep and woke up. And by then all the reaction had poured in, and it was funny to see like everyone just slamming the Celtics for that trade, just hammering them. And my first reaction was like, I've actually never been a big Kyrie guy, but I think he's worth betting on at his age, big. But it is interesting. I mean, they did outbid the market substantially for him, and it's going to be one of these trades we look back on for, you know, we're going to spend the whole year looking simultaneously back and forward on it. Like, how is Kyrie playing? How's the fit? Is Brad Stevens really doing X, Y, and Z? Where's the Nets pick at? It's just going to be, and who ends up being drafted by that pick, you know, it's going to be fascinating.
How about this, Zach, tampering, the Laker fine, the $500,000 fine, and now the issue of that some are asking, why do they even bother enforcing tampering? A GM said, tampering is going to go on. We're all guilty of it. Tampering's not the problem. Interference is the problem. When another team is interfering with your team, as an example, hey, listen, like, that coach doesn't know how to use you. Wait till you get to us in 2 years. Or that team, look at the crap they've put around you. When it's getting into your team, when a guy's under contract, we all know that a guy's going to be a free agent and his season ends in May, that his agent's going to be talking all year. Like, of course the conversation doesn't start on July 1. Of course it doesn't. That I think even the walk up to free agency, everyone accepts the conversations that go on. They've all said, we all live in glass houses. We're all guilty of it. It's the 2 years out, under contract, getting in the middle of my team and my situation is the problem. And that's where we have to draw the line. You think there's merit to that? That's a fair, especially smaller mid-markets?
I don't think there's a lot of merit to saying, well, we all do it, but the Lakers got caught, so we should hammer the Lakers. I don't think there's a lot of merit to that.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there is merit to making a distinction between something that happens 18 and 24 months before a player's free agency and a deal being done on June 15th when free agency doesn't start until July 1st. Like, I think that, like, there's all sorts of degrees of tampering, and the one that the Lakers got caught doing to me is problematic, but it is something that every team does, and it's, you know, teams do this without interference, so to speak, can happen without another team being involved. It could be a player's family. It could be a player's friends saying, you need more touches, blah, 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 blah. We need to get you out of here. And like, it's a team's job to massage that and figure it out and keep everyone happy internally. And it's not easy, but I don't, you know, I talked about tampering with Howard Beck on my pod earlier this week. I don't know. I lean toward the solution of like, there just shouldn't be any rules. Like, if
it's unenforceable.
If the fine for the NBA, I couldn't believe their press release. I thought the NBA would kind of pussyfoot around the issue a little bit. They said they have evidence of a prohibited expression of interest from Rob Pelinka to Aaron Mintz, Paul George's agent, which I assume, and I'm very confident that I'm right, they have a text message. They have some paper trail or whatever electronic paper trail proving this. Like, if you actually catch the GM of another team talking to the agent of a player under contract with a different team about maybe playing for that team, and the fine is 500, that like, then just don't have rules. Just don't have the rules. Right. Because like, that's the literal definition of, now you could go further and say, well, they didn't arrange a deal. They didn't talk contract, but you don't have to talk contract with Paul George. Paul George is a max player. Everybody knows who's going to have cap room. Everybody can get cap room at the drop of a hat. So I would, and also it doesn't really bother me that Rob Pelinka did that. And honestly, like, you know better than I do, people are out for blood because it's the Lakers, mm-hmm. and they're out for blood because it's Rob Pelinka. And if it were the Hornets and Rich Cho, I don't think people would be out for blood.
Well, part of it too is the Lakers are a threat in free agency that they, maybe they haven't been. I think there's a feeling they're like, they're lurking out there for great players again. And that's part of it. Here's a text I got right after the fine was leveled from a GM in the league. He said, the league just set the tampering precedent for a top 15 player at $500,000. Tell me who is not going to tamper if that's the penalty.
Oh, I got texts. Right? I mean, similar stuff. I got texts like, should we have a $2 million tampering line item in our budget now? Like, you know, like, is that how we're going to operate? Like, what? Well, just, of course we're going to pay that. And like, that's what I'm saying. If that's the fine, and like, I don't have any real moral objection with what the Lakers did, but by the letter of the law, they got caught in the most literal version of tampering that could possibly exist, and they got fined. So then I don't know why we have rules.
Last thing before we go, Zach, a guy who both you and I think certainly consider a friend and have this tremendous respect for, Harvey Ereton. He'll get inducted into he gets the Kurt Gowdy Award at the Hall of Fame. He gave a great, just a very Harvey-esque speech last Thursday night. And then he goes in with McGrady and Bill Self and Rebecca Lobo, that group.
Lobo, shout out to my girl Rebecca Lobo, UConn.
That was great. Did you see the photo she tweeted from high school? That was awesome.
You should see the photo I tweeted of.
I should talk. I've got a whole collection of my own photos.
Well, no, I was in 1995, because I'm old. I just turned 40. I was the scholar athlete at my high school. I was not a great athlete, but I was a good student. I went to high school in Connecticut, and they had this banquet at some banquet hall for all the scholar athletes, and like, you got to go up and shake Rebecca Lobo's hand. And you got a photo with Rebecca Lobo. The photo of the two of us, I've tweeted it a couple times. It's unclear who's worse. it's so bad they had just won the national title at UConn. It's so bad, but yes, I'm happy for her and thrilled for her. I mean, I can't even imagine what it's like to get the honor that Harvey's getting.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. And just, you know, a guy who, like, to me, like, that's who I wanted to be. I wanted to be Harvey Ereton. Like, he's written some of my favorite books on basketball. When the Garden Was Eden, on the Knicks.
If you haven't read When the Garden Was Eden, just pick it up now.
Money Players, Inside the New NBA, which at that time talked about point shaving with a star player. At the time, there were some, it would be a very different story in this age than it was then, but about talk of point shaving around the Pistons teams with Isaiah. And Stern literally was, he went on his own tour at the time to try to discredit the book, the story. That book was, you go back and read about, like, you know, the issues in the league, so many of them were the same, but that, the selling of the green, the book about international basketball, Crashing the Borders, which That's was right. kind of a quick hit book. It's probably like maybe 60,000-70,000 words. A lot of Spurs pop in there. I think he followed Tiscovilli around.
That's right.
And it was, I remember the book sort of began with the sort of the USA basketball disaster in Indianapolis at the Worlds. And
I like to think of that as the Argentinian basketball triumph.
Right. It was both. It was both. Right. And so anyway, Harvey's as good as we've ever had in this business.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been reading them as someone who grew up in the New York area, I've been reading them for God knows how many years, and it's always nice to see them bestow this honor on a media member. Jackie McMullen has gotten it before, Jack McCallum's gotten it before, so you can't get any higher than that.
That generation of NBA writer who kind of came of age as Lee came of age, Harvey, you said Jackie McMullen. Philip Bondi, who's one of my favorite writers, great columnist, wrote the book on the 84 draft.
Great book.
And then co-wrote The Selling of the Green about the Celtics and stuff there. I mean, that group was, Philip's a Hall of Famer too. He belongs in, but man, the standard that group set, It's just, but to me, Harvey was the, to me, preeminent. Like, he was the guy who you woke up, like, you'd read Harvey in the paper and you'd say, oh, I never thought of that angle. Like, right. I never, like, not only can I not write that, I couldn't even think of that premise, but he always challenged you to just think deeper and connect dots in a way that, like, you just learned a lot about how he went about it, how he talked to people, how he built relationships, and so thrilled to see him get honored.
Yeah, it's incredible, and like I said, I've been reading them for years, and you know, yeah, the writers who make you feel terrible about yourself are always the best ones. So, congrats to Harvey, and I got to watch his speech. I haven't seen the speech yet, so I got it.
Well, Zach, listen, thanks for stopping through, man, and hopefully we'll do this again soon.
Yeah, we'll do it again.
Maybe over on your pod.
Yeah, on the Low Post, and no, it's my pleasure, and I'm glad to finally do it here in New York, and we'll do it again. The season's going to be here before we know it.
Let's go. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Woj Pod. A big thank you to my guest today, Zach Lowe. Remember, you can subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes of this podcast wherever you get your podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your shows. You can also hear the Woj Pod every Wednesday and Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM Satellite Radio on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the Sirius XM app on Channel 967. I'd also like to take a moment to thank today's sponsors, Spotify, SeatGeek, and ZipRecruiter. Be sure to support them the way they support us here at the Woj Pod. We'll catch you next time.